everyone. Welcome to an unlicensed edition of ARG Presents. I'm your good buddy, your bosom companion, amigo Aaron, joined by a man who's wanted in 3 states and unwanted in 47 other states. I give you the Brent.
I would say the states would be insanity, state of confusion.
I agree.
I'm going to thoroughly enjoy this episode, Aaron.
I'm glad.
This is going to be a fun one.
It's not like the other episodes we do where you hate them the entire time.
I mean,
this time you're really going to have a good time.
You just got to bully through so you can get to the good ones.
That's right. You know, in case you missed it last week, Brent, we spun the wheel. We made the deal. This week, we're going to be at basically the pie piece that's entitled, BAM, Illegal Games, or Illegally Published Games, if you will. And, Brent, these are the games that should not have been. Something went wrong. There was a malfunction at the junction. There was a bad judgment call. There was a law wrangling that went south. Something like that.
No, you forgot the one major thing that all these things have in common. Yes. They really wanted money now.
Yes. This is why we don't publish games. Exactly right here. Because this is exactly the way we would do it. Now, you know, it's hard to go into a whole lot of backstories, but I actually looked up some stuff, and I want to discuss with you. You know, this category was far more difficult for me to find something to play in than I anticipated, but a lot of the same games kept popping up, right, on these. Now, let's talk about the criteria here, because I think we both had different ideas of what we were looking at. When I heard illegally published or illegal games, I thought to myself, okay, these are games that were either destroyed or banished because they had done something, they had not gotten the right permissions, or these were games that did something that was against the home system's rules. For example, they went back and beat the copy protection, something like that. But you had a different take on this, didn't you? I mean, when you heard the term, how did you think about illegal games in your head?
Well, I think that it goes both ways. Yeah. I think if you would have picked a game where they, like Tengen did for Nintendo, right, they reverse engineered the copyright chip so that they wouldn't have to pay the licensing fees through Nintendo. That's certainly one way to have looked at this category. But I took a different approach. I was looking for games that were so against the law that they spurred court cases, and that's how I made my decision.
It's funny, as I was researching this and looking for a game, the same games kept popping up. So this isn't something that happens like all the time, okay? But it does happen. The games I saw a lot were, I saw, you mentioned Tengen. Tengen was basically Atari with a different name.
Yeah.
And they went out, and amongst other things, basically redo and beat the NES chip and then publish stuff for it. So all the Tengen games were on the list, but specifically their Tetris game for the NES, which I saw on every list of this type, where they basically put Tetris out when they didn't technically have the rights to it. Of course, that's up for debate, considering the muddy waters that was the rights for a Tetris.
Yeah, yeah, Tetris, I mean, that's a whole episode in and of itself if we wanted to go that route. Highly, highly sought after license that obviously couldn't go to everyone, but it sure seemed like for as many Tetris games that are out there.
Yeah. Now, I saw one thing come up a lot, and I wanted to get to this. And of course, we're going to go back. A lot of games, if you looked up illegal games, you got banned games. Now, that's not what this is. Those were games that were usually smutty. I saw Custard's Last Stand. They all that crap come up over and over. But one that I found come up a lot was a game called Too Human. Now, this is a fairly recent entry that came out in 2008 from a developer called Silicon Knights. Are you familiar with this particular story, Brent?
In part, I know the gist of it. Why don't you go ahead and fill us in on it, though?
Well, basically what happened was the company that made this game, Too Human, again, Silicon Knights, they decided to make this game on the Unreal 3 engine. And what happened was they didn't pay for the Unreal 3 engine. Then they ended up, they were like, we're going to make our own engine. And it's the Mun Meal Me engine, yeah, basically. And so Epic was like, after this, and this game was out, right? The boxes, it was out. Epic's like, wait a minute. You horked on tons of our code. And they took it to court, and Silicon Knights got beat down. And so this and their X-Men game were ordered destroyed and taken off the market. And that was pretty much the end of Silicon Knights. Now that's an illegal game.
Now, what's funny is, see, that is a, obviously that's a breach of copyright, because they were using code that they didn't write, and they didn't reverse engineer. They just horked. Right. We're going to be looking at a case later in the show where it's a different type of copyright case. And it'll be interesting to talk about the differences for sure.
Yeah. Did you know right away what you were doing this week?
No.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was much, much harder than you thought it would be, wasn't it?
No, I had several options.
Oh, well,
I picked this one for it's important.
It was hard for me. Listen, I had to really, and I'll go into my thought process. I guess I'll lead the dance this week, Brent.
All right.
I had to go through a lot. I had to go to dark places this week, dark, to find this game, because everything I kept picking ultimately either didn't fit the profile, or it just didn't do the job, man. And so I thought to myself, okay, the only games I could find that I could truly define as illegal. Published games with the aforementioned Too Human and the X-Men title that they did, but both those games are more modern, and I didn't have them, to be honest with you. I probably could have found them, but I didn't want to look for them. So I went, okay, let's go with games that used unlicensed IP, okay? Let's go down that road. Now, that's not a road that's well-trodden, but a lot of times this comes up with, like, basically ground roots, fan-made products, all right? And so I thought to myself, well, let's find something that's got, at least has an interesting backstory behind it and see what I can find of it. So here's what I came up with. And so my game this week, is you'll be stunned that this exists, but I swear to God, I'm not lying, because I'd never heard of this. My game this week is, bam, My Little Pony Fighting is Magic.
Which, yes,
I think we could all agree with that statement. It is magical. So, My Little Pony Fighting is Magic was how can I put this? It was a game that was made by the community that surrounds My Little Pony. All right. Now, before we get into the game proper, let's take a little walk back for those of the uninitiated into the beautiful, lovely, glorious world of My Little Pony. My Little Pony was created by Hasbro around 81, and it was done by a lady named Bonnie Zachary, I think's her name, or Zacharel. She came up with these little plastic dolls called My Pretty Ponies, right? And that ultimately morphed into My Little Pony. Now, My Little Pony's been around for, like I said, for many, many years, and I remember seeing these things back in the day, and little girls liked them. And it went away for a long time. Like, it was around in the 80s, and it kind of went away. And then it kind of came back in the 90s, but there wasn't much going on. All of a sudden, there was, like, this big revival in the 2000s. And the reason I know a lot about this is because my kid, briefly, was into My Little Ponies. And I used to watch the cartoon occasionally. And, yeah, and if you watch the cartoon, it was about a bunch of ponies that lived in, like, this magical land called Equestria. And they all had their own gimmick. You had a kind of a hick country pony, and you had kind of the arrogant pony, and a little super prissy pony. You had all different ponies, and this is how they interacted. Art was good. The voice work was good too. Believe it or not, it was actually a pretty halfway decent cartoon. I'm not gonna sit here and say I watched a ton of My Little Pony, but it is what it is. And so My Little Pony sort of made a comeback off this cartoon, and it's been riding high since then. In 2010, you had Generation 4 start up. They had more of these things. And believe it or not, this year, there's going to be another sort of revival of My Little Pony coming out. So there's a lot of background in the area of My Little Pony. Now, with all that said, How in God's name do you get from My Little Pony or Pretty Ponies, little plastic ponies, to a My Little Pony fighting game? Well, it's funny how that works. So the story goes that somewhere in back in the early 2010s, someone basically put up a picture of two ponies in like almost like a Ken and Ryu, just a picture. And the community decided this was so novel and clever that they were going to develop a game around it. That's how it happened. So basically, one of the community just posted a picture. So a committee was formed, and the committee was called the Maine Six. Get it? Maine. Yeah. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but Maine Six is also what they call the six primary characters in My Little Pony. So there's a tie-in there with that. And so they were off to work on this My Little Pony game. There were actually a team of 9 volunteers, despite the fact they called themselves the Maine Six. And so they decided, what gaming type engine should we use to put this together? And so what the game that came up the most in terms of what they thought was a quality fighting game to base this game on was the Marvel versus Capcom series. Okay. So this was basically their inspiration for this game. The game uses an engine called the Fighter Maker engine. Are you familiar with this one, the Brent?
I'm not, but I'm sure it's based sort of on Mugen.
Let me tell you something. In case you're unfamiliar with Mugen, that is basically a generic fighter maker where you can import sprites and stuff from other fighting games and basically make your own fighting game, and it's pretty good. Sometimes it's brilliant, but having played a lot of music, this is a very tight system that they're using, I have to say. And it's one thing, having played this, it's very combo centric, Brent. It's right up your alley. So what are you playing in this game? The premise of the game is you're picking one of your ponies. Now, when this thing first came out, I think they decided they were going to have like 17 playable ponies in this. but they never got that many, which we'll get to why here in a second. So they started work on this thing, and they kept it going. Now, keep in mind, they had no permission to do any of this work, okay? But it had been the My Little Pony experience when they did little fan stuff like that generally Hasbro didn't hassle them, okay? They would pretty much let them do what they wanted because Hasbro liked having a community, a good relationship with their fan community. Now, I don't know if anyone has ever seen any footage. A few years ago, there was a phenomenon that got a lot of press called where they had bronies. These were men that really liked My Little Pony, right? And so this got a lot of press. And so you got to see a lot of, I think they did a documentary on it, Brent. But what you did get to see was all these My Little Pony conventions, you know, gatherings. And these things weren't small, man. These were huge events, you know. And Hasbro was all up in them. So they had a pretty good working, they worked with the community pretty well. They didn't have a lot of strife. And so the Maine Six just assumed that Hasbro would be okay with their game. And so they went to work on it. And they had not, as of October 12th, 2011, they'd been working on it for a couple years. And they had had no conversations with Hasbro at all, and at that point, since the game had been previewed, they assumed everything was working well. So they kept working on this. The footage that they released early on showed Twilight Sparkle, Pinkie Pie, Rarity, Fluttershy, and Applejack. Okay, these are all ponies, by the way, in case you're unfamiliar with it. And then They were not showing the very popular Rainbow Dash, who would come later. So they worked on this, and right around summer of 2012, someone leaked the early release of the game. It was like a pre-build, okay? And guess where they released it to? This is what I like about this, because listen, if there's going to be shenanigans with My Little Pony, you know it's going down on 4chan, and that's where 4chan. Of all the places to have leaked this, it was 4chan. They leaked this game. It was a developer's version. That really made the Maine Six mad. And so they, because they were distributing the game for testing to like a bunch of external testers, they completely stopped and went on the warpath, right? However, they calmed down, and they decided, okay, we overreacted. We're not gonna get mad. So the game stayed in production until a fellow from GameSpot did a piece on the game. He'd got wind of it, right? So all of a sudden, the game is starting to get press. Okay.
Yeah.
And
you don't want that.
That yeah. And so they're well in right now. They've got the engine. They've got the most of the backgrounds. All they need now is to just finish up the ponies and, you know, tie it all up. Good to go. Well, they were working along, and bam, February 13th, you start the wheels come off. They get a letter of cease and desist from Hasbro, who tells them basically, yeah, you can immediately stop doing this, or we're going to drop the hammer. And so the game was ultimately had to be abandoned right at that point. Now, the story has a nice ending because what happened was they did cease production of My Little Pony Fighting His Magic. But what they did was they took this game and they basically redid all the characters in it. Okay, so you couldn't release stuff because Hasbro would kill you. So what they did was they just basically turned the horses into stuff like goats and other unknown horses and whatever you could find, dogs. I don't know what all's in here, but they ended up coming out with a game, believe it or not, in 2018, the same engine, the same people, and it's called Them's Fighting Herds. Have you heard of this one?
No.
What? You don't like Them's Fighting Herds? That's a great name, I thought. This was from Main 6. Again, released in 2018. They're still working on this, by the way. The Microsoft Windows version came out in 2020. Linux just came out a few months ago, March 25th of this year. Okay. This was I believe it was an Indiegogo they used to back Them's Fighting Herds. And they got their goal. They didn't like landslide the goal, but they got enough money in there to do the Linux version, which they did. They came through on everything they said they would do. Them's Fighting Herds has a very rich environment here. You've got like a lobby where it's like a 16-bit top-down view of like you can walk your ponies around this village and chat with each other. It's got a very intricate story mode. It's got online play. It's got everything. I was watching this thing. And it looks great. And it all came from My Little Pony Fighting His Magic. So if you're, and by the way, it's available on Steam. So if you want to play Them's Fighting Herds, and I suggest at some point, Brent, I didn't want to play it. I didn't play it because I thought maybe someday we might try it. Them's Fighting Herds, one of our fighting games. In fact, the next time fighting games come up, it's going to be Them's Fighting Herds. I can tell you that right now. We're going to pick that. So the history of My Little Pony Fighting His Magic. Now, let's talk about the game proper, okay? Unfortunately, again, this was a game that was not finished, but someone went in, some cute people, some funny people, they went in and they actually made this game playable, and they released it to be as something you could download and play. The story mode's really not there. You've only got, I think you can have up to 9 ponies. I think there are 7 available at release. And you pick your pony, and then you go to work. This plays like any other fighting game you could think of in terms of it's got, you know, kicks, punches, but you're all horses. And so it does add some unique aspects. Like I was playing Pinkie Pie earlier. One of her primary attacks is to lick you.
Yeah.
Deadly. You know, and one of the horses, Applejacks, has a rope that she kind of whips you with. They do tail whips, but it's heavily... I'm sorry, Frodo. He corrects me. It's ponies, not horses. My bad. Same thing, as far as I'm concerned. But the fighting is very combo-centric when you play it, including lots of air juggles and stuff that, like, it's real advanced. Let's put it that way. When you play this game, it is not boring. I can tell you that right now. It's nonstop action. They also have super moves, just like you would find in Marvel vs. Capcom, where there's projectiles. Everything you would expect to be in a fighting game is in here. I will say that the version of this I played, it worked. you had to do some stuff from a really ugly pull down menu, like set up your joysticks and but you could pause the game and change your stage on the fly. It had some awesome music. I will say that the art and the music in this thing are off the shelf good. It plays pretty well, and I think it's actually pretty clever. Now, I know, Brent, you got a chance to play this. What were your thoughts on the old My Little Pony fighting his magic in terms of a fighting game?
Well, I need to take a few steps back here.
All right.
And we need to discuss the legality of this.
Okay. It's illegal.
No question, they were using intellectual property that they did not own.
Yeah.
There's no gray area. Now, they never, my understanding was they never intended to sell the My Little Pony version of this, correct?
That's what they say, but you never know. And that's much like Hasbro, they didn't know either. You could say anything, you know?
So as a fan project, I think Hasbro was a bit out of line. Yes, you have to protect your intellectual property or lose it, and that whole load of garbage. What a load of garbage, by the way. What a stupid law. So they had to basically step in and end this, which is unfortunate because although I do not know anything from the My Little Pony universe.
What? You?
I know nothing. Absolutely nothing. The game is incredibly colorful. The animations are impeccable. The fluidness and everything is downright impressive. Using a four-legged creature and putting them into a fighting game where the moves and the reach makes sense had to have been challenging because that's just not typically how people think. Now, a lot of the fighting moves, when they do them, they will stand up in a more upright, you know, humanoid stance and throw punches and kicks, but not always. And I think that the animations on how they did the special moves and just your regular punch and kick moves were amazing. Also, this is the version that we had is a four button game.
Yeah.
And really it's
much like Marvel vs. Capcom.
A, B, C, and then D would have been a special, something that wasn't a punch or a kick. It usually did something else.
Yeah. I kind of liked that. I thought that worked okay.
It was very good.
I mean, you don't need six button action here.
I think the combo system that they have they've put into this is incredible.
It's stunningly good, isn't it?
The chains feel very natural.
Yes.
Now I do think that you don't do enough damage and you build your super meter too slowly. But those are our tweaks that are probably subject to the build that we played more so than the game proper, because this game has a ton of different builds, a ton of them.
Yeah.
I tried to pick the one
that was the final build of this, but I found another one. Yeah. I found one after this, but also there's a lot of fan tweaked ones.
Yes.
So yeah, it's finding an official version of this is not easy. Oh, there is none. But finding one that's like the penultimate version is not easy. I agree.
The backgrounds are playful. They have different night and day scenes. Some of them do. The pony all are voice acted. I'm guessing they pulled clips from the show.
Yeah,
or maybe
they had all the original voice actors that they pulled clips from the show. You know, a couple things.
Works so well that it's now. This is very off brand. I think I don't know the source material, but this is very off brand for My Little Pony. And
no.
I would imagine that. Well, I mean, I don't think the My Little Ponies go into one-on-one fighting on every.
Oh, you mean the act? Yeah. I'm talking the art and stuff. I mean, this is.
Oh no,
directly.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, yeah. But I think from a Hasbro's perspective, they didn't want this to reflect poorly on their brand being a violent, more of a violent tendency.
One would wonder who this was aimed at, because I can't imagine little girls wanting to do this. This would make them cry, I think, when you saw the My Little Ponies party, like, I mean, violently going to war in a battle. But I mean, on the flip side,
you obviously are unaware of the extent of the My Little Pony fan base.
Well, I know what you, I'm not saying someone wouldn't appeal to me. I can see why Hasbro looked at this and was like, nah, I don't think we want that.
Now, that said, something I want to throw in here. Would I play this as a fighting game? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think it did. I wouldn't pick this over Darkstalkers or X-Men versus Street Fighter. Let's not get silly. However, there's a lot to learn. And the moves feel fair for the most part. I'm not huge on some of the inputs on how you have to pull them off, but they're all usually Street Fighter moves, you know, down to forward button, charge moves, double taps. So they didn't reinvent the wheel, but I think what they did do, what they put together, was a very solid game.
You know, me and you have played a lot of these, like, homemade fighting games. They range from unplayable to astoundingly good, because there are some people in that community that know how to put together a fighting game. They're guys that know the stuff that we don't know, the real minutia, right? Clearly, this is on the upper echelon of that scale. In terms, someone knew, they had a vision of what they wanted, and they managed to get these characters to do the stuff that made the game work, and also knew the actual basics of what makes a fighting game good. This is a little too combo-y for my taste. I know you love this stuff, but I mean, anything that has these sorts of strong combos, air juggles, that, again, this is difficult stuff to kind of go through. I should mention that, you know, the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic stuff, a lot of the characters stuff in that were conceived by an artist named Lauren Faust. When this got taken down, she volunteered to provide original character designs for any of the main six's future stuff. So I'm pretty sure she's the one that did this stuff for them's fighting herds when this came out. So that shows you the kind of, they had a lot of backing.
Yeah, well, I think it's because they took the time and they went to made a quality product.
What are they
that will get you a lot of dap in the industry, behind the scenes type affair.
You know, one other thing I want to mention is when this was in pre-production, the working title was called Marvel versus Clopcom, which had to be said. I like the idea that I know. Marvel versus Clopcom would have also been a good one to name it. So it's fun to see that this game succeeded. It's out right now, sorta. You know, you won't be able to play the My Little Pony characters, but having looked at them's fighting herds, the characters are just as cute, the background's just as colorful, and the music on this is off the charts good. So I think this is something that is, believe it or not, I think this is something worth looking at. You can't pick up Fighting is Magical. You can download it for free, but you can actually download them's fighting herds on Steam for $14.99. And I should mention that at IGN gave that game 8 out of 10. So there you go. So that's my entry this week into illegal games. I did the best I could, given what the limited choices, the Brent. Now you, on the other hand, we should probably get into it before we talk about your game. I initially disputed your choice this week, because I didn't think it met the spirit of the category. But once I sat down and thought about it, of course, we had a vote where I got crushed on the Discord. But once I sat down and thought about it, and I said that before I had started looking hard. And once I realized how difficult it was to find something and the rarity of what you had to talk about, I want to say that I changed my mind. So now I'm giving you permission to go ahead with your game.
Oh, thanks, A. I chose Casey Munchkin for the Odyssey 2. And a lot of people don't even know that this is a illegal game. And let's talk about the game first, and then we'll talk about what makes it illegal. KC Munchkin is a maze chase game where you play as a character who navigates an assortment of mazes, eating munchies, and are being terrorized by pursuing ghosts, pursuing monsters.
Mm-hmm. Don't get us sued.
And what makes this very unique is the maze element of it is can be set to random or have a set pattern of mazes. And the munchies that you eat actually travel around the maze. And as you eat more and more of them, they actually get faster and faster running away from you. It's a very unique take on the maze chase setup. A few other things that are unique about KC Munchkin is there is a mode where you can design your own mazes, which huge back in the day. And then there are mazes that are invisible or that will only become visible if you're not moving. Some really intelligent design to make a maze chase game a little more interesting than its common clones or, you know, other people who have navigated this type of game. Now, we had KC Munchkin back in the day, Aaron, if you do remember.
I do. And I still own two copies.
We played the heck out of it.
Yeah.
This was probably my third favorite Odyssey game behind Pickaxe Pete and Quest for the Rings. But this was something, Quest for the Rings, you really couldn't play solo. And Pickaxe Pete was my all-time favorite game. But this was a fun solo game where you saw how far you could get because you had one life, and as soon as you died, that was it. It recorded your score, and it sent you back to the beginning. But the sending you back to the beginning really didn't mean much because if you ever got bored of the normal flow of stages, you could always go to a different aspect of the game, either making mazes or going to random mazes and stuff like that, and still have a really good time. Now, Aaron, what game would you say this reminds you the most of?
Well, I know it's Pac-Man, obviously.
Okay.
But I'll go ahead with your stick. I've got definitive answers on what I think about this whole thing. Go on.
Well, let's talk about this. Let's break it down a little bit. So you agree that this reminds you, if you had to describe what this game was, you would describe it as Pac-Man-like, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I would.
Okay. When Phillips was making this game, their plan was they were going to get the rights from Namco for Pac-Man. And they were going to bring it to the home console market for the Odyssey 2. And they started making the game and going after the rights at the same time. And what happened was they said, hey, you know, we want to license this. And they said, sorry, Atari paid for exclusive rights for the home console port of Pac-Man. And obviously that put a huge damper in Phillips's plan. So they said, you know what? We're just going to make our own maze chase game, and we're going to be really careful not to get sued. You know, we want a game that is in the spirit of Pac-Man because it's a maze chase game, but we do not want to make a game that is so similar that we're going to get in trouble for it. And off went Ed Everett to put this game together.
The master.
Yes. And he worked really hard in making something that was similar but different. And of course, everyone knew they were going to get sued because Atari had already been on a warpath. They paid a lot of money to get those exclusive rights, and they crushed anyone that got in their way. What's kind of funny is there's a game called Jawbreaker that is very much a Pac-Man clone, far more than most of the Pac-Man clones are out there. Their difference being that you ate candy instead of eating whatever, dots, and you were a set of teeth that went around a maze and you ate all the candy in the maze. When they got sued, first Atari said, you know, cease and desist, you have to get rid of this, you can't sell this. And the people who made Jawbreaker was like, screw you, Atari. We're going to do what we want. If a court tells us this is illegal, then we'll shut it down. But, you know, we're not going to just listen to you. And Atari, of course, sued. So they took him to court, and Jawbreaker won. Jawbreaker, they said, yeah, Jawbreaker, different enough, not really Pac-Man. And the creators of Jawbreaker said, you know, I'm glad we won, but this could be really bad for the video game industry. I think they knew that they had a clone of Pac-Man. And when they won their court case, they were like, oh, crap. You know, other people are going to start stealing our games, too. So Atari said, you know, we're going to file an appeal, which for those that don't know, in the U.S. courts, just because a lower court says something, it can be bumped up the line. Going from, you know, city to state to Supreme Court, you know, there's different levels of court, and whatever the higher court says, it trumps whatever the lower courts say. So Atari's said, yeah, we're going to take these Jawbreaker guys to court again. We're going to appeal the ruling, and they knew they were going to win. And the Jawbreaker people knew that they were going to win because their game was a Pac-Man clone. And they settled out of court before it actually got appealed. And that's good. It's good that they settled out of court because they would have definitely lost. So now it's Philips's turn. And they said, yo, you know, our game is different. Here are 9 different things that make our game incredibly different than Pac-Man. And the Pac-Man people, or Atari, said, yeah, well, here's 22 things that make your game exactly like our game. And off to court they went. So the lower court said, you know what, this is a maze chase game, but you can't copyright themes. You can't copyright, you know, navigating a maze. That's not a copyrightable thing. And besides that, Casey Munchkin is different enough from Pac-Man that we are going to let you keep selling it. And Philips was like, sweet. And Atari said, you know, we're going to appeal the decision. That's complete bullcrap. So they beat getting Pac-Man to market. Casey Munchkin was released in 1981. And Aaron, we know that this was a huge seller. This was actually the number one selling game for the Odyssey 2.
Yeah, this is one of the few times where I thought, like, man, we're ahead of it. We really got something with this one.
This actually sold systems. Many people bought this because Pac-Man, for those that weren't around for this time, Pac-Man was a huge deal.
Yeah.
An absolute huge deal. It brought in a billion plays in the arcade. So getting to market first with something that you could play a maze chase game at home was a huge deal. And they did it first. And Atari was scrambling because now they have the rights for a Pac-Man game. Just because Casey Munchkin wasn't named Pac-Man, they thought they were getting screwed. So they appealed the process and took him to court again. Well, the higher court, the Seventh District Court, ruled in favor of Atari, saying, yes, this is just a Pac-Man clone. You can't sell this. Pull it off the market immediately. But the reason how they looked at it is so backwards in the way that we think today that it's hard to step back and accept what the court ruled. What the judge basically said was, no one cares about the art of a game. And if you put this out there, people are going to think that it's Pac-Man. And if they think that it's Pac-Man, then it is Pac-Man. And even though Phillips went very hard and said, we are never going to mention Pac-Man in our advertising. We're never going to mention Pac-Man on our box art. We're never going to make the comparison. When they got out there and stores were advertising the game, they were saying things like, just like Pac-Man, or this is Pac-Man, but for the Odyssey. And you can't do, you know, Phillips didn't have any control over that. But that was the damning piece of evidence that really broke the camel's back on this and made the court rule for Atari. On top of that, and that I can at least, I don't like saying that gaming isn't art and no one cares about the players. It's all about, you know, the initial impression. I hate that, but I can understand how people would feel that way in 1981. Here's what really killed it for me. The judge said that another reason why this is just like Pac-Man is Pac-Man was a non-violent game targeting women to get women into arcades. Weird. And you did the exact same thing.
Wow, that's a multiple stretches on that. Judge idiot.
And here's why this is important, right? Keishi Munchkin, a fun game. A lot of people enjoy it. Some people don't. That's all good, right? But the historic significance of Keishi Munchkin makes it one of the most important video games of all time, because it kind of set the groundwork for how copyright works when it comes to video games. Art, you can draw a picture of an apple, right? You can't copyright that I drew this picture of an apple. The only way that art is really copyrightable is if you physically take that someone else's interpretation of an apple, make it, and then claim it as your own, right? You can't do that. Of course, music, you can't copyright, you know, the A, D, B flat run of notes. You have to say that someone has stolen a large chunk of music for it to be something copyrighted. Video games are now under this law umbrella that says if you are thematically similar, you have a chance that you are going to be committing copyright infringement. And that is so mind-blowing in the world that we live in today. Now, you don't see a lot of people push this issue. And I think if you did, we'd be living in a very different landscape. But the way the courts work in the United States, once something is ruled, that's it. Now, the Supreme Court wouldn't take this case up. They said, no, you know, we ain't going to do it. So if push came to shove, there is a chance if someone sued someone else for copyright infringement and it got pushed up to the Supreme Court, rulings could change. But as it sits right now, it's a scary video game world we live in when it comes to copyright. My personal opinion is I prefer to see the board game copyright, where you can't, in board games, you can't copyright a rule set. You can't copyright a theme. You can't copyright anything except the literal art of a game. And that's it. You can't, you know, the concepts and stuff, you can't copyright. So, Aaron, I know you have opinions on this. What are you thinking?
Well, I want to just jump back for a second just to talk about the game, right? Because, I mean, let's face facts. This is a Pac-Man variant, if you will, or a
Maze Chase game.
A different take on the theme. But first of all, this crushes the Atari 2600 version.
Irrelevant.
I mean, it crushes. No, I'm just talking about the game.
Okay.
This game is great. Maze editor, check. some mazes in this where the only way you can go between different sectors of the maze is to go through the ghost house as it rotates. I've got to give credit to Ed Everett, who put this together. And you mentioned your favorite games on the Odyssey were this and Pickaxe Pete and Quest Rings. Ed Everett did them all.
Yeah,
he did all those.
Yeah.
He did almost all of the Odyssey 2 library was Ed Everett. He did almost all the good stuff. I think the only thing, one of the things I don't see on here is Killer Bees. I don't think that was him. He did everything on the Odyssey 2. This guy was the King Dong of the Odyssey 2. All right. So I'm going to give that guy double props.
Yeah. Right?
Secondly, the dots moving in this is great. That's a brilliant concept. Instead of just having dots all over the place, I love that. I mean, this game really, of all the Pac-Man clones to get taken to court, and you know why they did it, because Atari saw this come out and they're like, man, this crushes what we got. You know, this ain't good.
Atari was so wanted to get to market so bad so they could stop all these lawsuits.
Yeah.
The Atari 2600 cart that was released was basically a prototype. It was never really meant to go to market. But they were like, screw it, put it in a box, let's go.
The one thing people don't know, the guy that did the Pac-Man for the 2600, of course, he was under the gun. They wanted it next amount of weeks. One of those deals. Sort of like E.T. And you know how that went, you know, because you're taking quality programmers and giving them a ridiculous window to program.
Well, he had 6 months as opposed to 6 weeks.
Right, but you're here's 6 months. Put together the most popular game of all time and make it great. It's like, But the funny thing is, as horrible as that was, that guy made, he was one of the first guys to share in the royalty program at Atari. And he made $18 billion for that game. So it worked out good for him. No, not for anybody else. But this game is, in terms of fun factor, this is several factors ahead of Atari Pac-Man. It's funny, we just covered the Bally Astrocade a couple weeks ago. There's a game on that, I think it's called Munch Man, something like that. And it is identical to the arcade Pac-Man. It also crushes the Atari version. I mean, crushes it, by the way. But it's identical to the arcade. It's got the tune. It's got the exact same maze, the same music. It's got the cherries. It's got everything, right? So how's that thing walking around unsued? While this, you know, and this got taken to court. Well, I think Atari thought this was a bigger threat, which and they were probably right, because despite the fact that this thing got taken off the shelves, you can find this thing. It's by far the most seen Odyssey cartridge there is. I see this game everywhere.
Well, it's the most sold, too.
Yeah, I picked up a box. I picked up the last box I picked up just because I saw it sitting there, and I was like, well, I guess I'll just buy this, too. I've already got it, and I picked it up. You had to have it. I'm not just going to leave it there, you know? So as a game, this is a great game. I know we were talking to our buddy Rushi in the chat. He hates this game. In Discord, we were talking about it. I don't understand why Rushi hates him. He's the only person I've ever met that didn't like it. This is a great game. It's a must play. If you're going to play any Odyssey 2 stuff, and Mitsuyama reminds me, yes, there's also invisible mazes in here as well. Great stuff. Now, if you move on to the court case, again, this just goes to show you, this is what happens when a court that's sort of ignorant makes a call. And that happens a lot. You see a lot of ignorant judges do ignorant crap. But on the flip side, there's no doubt that this is a Pac-Man clone. And there's also no doubt in my mind that stores build this as a Pac-Man. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? You're trying to make a bunch of money. You're going to put ads in the paper that says, look, Odyssey 2's Pac-Man's here. Come get it. And, you know, and that's what they did. So as much as I hate what Atari did, and of course, they're super litigious anyway, they were right. It is a Pac-Man ripoff. It just, they took what Atari did and just did it 10 times. I prefer this to arcade Pac-Man by a long shot. Because
Pac-Man, yes.
Yeah.
I prefer Miss Pac-Man over all of it, but
well, understandable.
Original Pac-Man, yes.
Yeah.
Now, see, I have flip-flopped back and forth over this. And from a legal standpoint, I like dabbing into these little legal things. And I am certainly no lawyer. And no. my knowledge of the law is surface deep at absolute best. However, It's hard because the main issue that the law, that the judge frowned upon was, is there going to be marketplace confusion? Are people going to look at this game and say, hey, that's Pac-Man? And it's unfortunate that Maze Chase games, it's just like Q-tip, right? What is a Q-tip, Aaron?
A Q-tip is a little stick with a fuzzy end on it.
It's a cotton swab.
Okay.
Right? But no one ever calls them cotton swabs. They only call them Q-tips.
So like Frisbees.
Right, exactly. Flying disc, it's a Frisbee. So when you have that type of market penetration, I can understand where if you put out something that looked like a Pac-Man Maze Chase game, and your character was a face that opens and closes its mouth, that eats dots, that is being chased by ghosts, I cannot say that there is not going to be any market confusion. However, this is so far beyond what Pac-Man is. It has so many different ideas. It has so many different aspects. And in the end, like the things like the invisible mazes, being able to construct your own maze, none of that mattered. That none of that was important, because the core of the game is a maze chase that looks like Pac-Man. So it's very frustrating. And I still haven't made up my mind. I've actually racked my brain thinking about this for hours and hours and reading different source materials on the subject of, do I think this ruling was justified? I don't know. What do you think, Aaron?
Well,
do you
think what, that- here, let me tell you what I can take this to the house right here. I think the guys that make the Odyssey wanted a Pac-Man. Okay, clearly, they tried to license it, okay? When they didn't get the license, they told their guy, Ed, they said, listen, make us a game that won't get us in trouble, okay? Listen, they were trying to rip off Pac-Man. That's their goal, okay? If you look at the box art, it's just different enough to not be Pac-Man, to let the people know it's a fine line. We need you to make box art that tells people, hey, this is Pac-Man, without saying it's Pac-Man, okay? That's the whole goal of this. So their whole goal was to have a Pac-Man. Let's not fool ourselves. It was the strength of this man's brilliance, his programming prowess, and his ability to generate a fun game that lifts this past what it actually was supposed to be, which was a ripoff of Pac-Man. This guy's the guy cranked up something that was awesome from the ashes of something that was just going to be a Pac-Man ripoff. So I think you look at this game as a exercise in programming genius and games genius, and then but you the rest of it is what it is. They were making a Pac-Man clone and they got caught with their hand in a cookie jar. That's the way I look at it.
So you think the court was justified?
I mean, ultimately it's a Pac-Man. That's if you again, everything in this is aimed to get you confused with this a Pac-Man. But and it's not like this is the only culprit. You know, I don't want to single it out.
Oh, yeah, there were tons.
Like I said, we're looking at the box art if you watch the video. It's two furry creatures that sort of look like shaped like ghosts, chased around another guy that's sort of shaped like a Pac-Man, and he's going around eating multicolored dots in a maze. That's Pac-Man. I mean, they're making it look like Pac-Man. So that's ultimately what it is. So in my opinion, still a great game. It's still easily available. I mean, you could pick these up for a song if you've got an Odyssey. I can't imagine anyone having an Odyssey and not having this.
Yeah, being on the market for almost 2 full years, it sold its fair share of copies and then can never be sold again. So there you go.
Yeah. it's a unique game. You know, before we leave this category, Brent, just some closing thoughts, if we may. It's interesting to delve into this area involving the courts and whatnot and permissions. Do you see this sort of thing? I mean, do you think this is pretty much gone away, or is this something that you think is going to grow? We're going to see more games get pulled off the shelves, this sort of thing. Is this something we're going to see happen a lot more, or maybe not hardly happen at all?
No, you see it all the time. You see it all the time in modern gaming. PUBG tried to sue, saying that, you know, you can, saying that they own Battle Royale, and not the the concept, but you can't have a game where you run around and collect guns and then shoot in an arena that closes in on itself. You know, they said, that's ours, you can't do it. And the court said, no, they can do it. They're different enough. No one's going to look at Fortnite and think that it's PUBG.
Yeah.
And in the end, that's what matters. And that is so frustrating. Because I think there are aspects out there that are much, much closer to copyright infringement than Casey Munchkin was to Pac-Man.
Yeah.
But they changed their visuals enough, which I don't think should that should matter, to not, you know, not be in trouble. So, but no, this is going to keep going forever. And the reason why it's going to keep going on forever is money. It's always about the money.
I wanted to pick desperately Fighters History for this episode, but I couldn't because Fighters History won their court case. But this,
yeah,
this all, I mean, this is not the first time this has happened where a genre, a game that's been made popular in a certain genre that whoever makes it decides that no one else can play there.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately you're correct. Think about it. You could do the same thing for fighting games and driving games and sandbox games. So yeah, I have a feeling we're not out of court yet. And as a person who personally goes to court, I can tell you right now, there's going to be a lot of uncomfortable suits worn on those various days.
Yes.
Speaking of uncomfortable, here's my uncomfortable transition to the wheel, Britt, the wheel. All right. So we've got a whole new stock of pieces that came in last week, and I've added another one to the wheel. You know what? I said I'm not going to mess around anymore, and I put the most dangerous one on here, Brent, if I can wheel over to it here. I can't even look at it. It's the Benetton AY-3-8500 core, suggested by Hermsky. I don't know what this is, but it scares me a lot.
That's
tell you
not
that
the
right
most
now.
Dangerous on there, but it's up there. It's
and
up
then
there.
As our retro rewind piece, a surprisingly popular show we did back in the day, I put the Jupiter Ace back on there. It's got an Ace on it. All right, do you have any thoughts you would like to see to come up this week at Brent?
Chat choice. I want to leave it to the people.
Chat choice. But those guys are crazy. All right, here we go. And we're off. Get a good tight shot here, and the winner is the Jupiter Ace. It's Ace time, y'all. Jupiter Ace.
Man, it's been a long time since we retro rewind, Aaron.
Yes, it
has. A long time.
Do you recall what we played on the Jupiter Ace episode?
I know that I was incredibly ill that day. And
you
I dressed up in a shower curtain.
Yes, you did. I don't know why. It's because it was a Halloween episode. That's why.
I remember I had the microphone because we were wearing lapel mics at the time.
Yeah.
And my microphone was covered for half the show.
Yeah. I remember that.
That tells me that this was definitely one of our older episodes.
Yeah, this was actually October 27th, 2019. We covered Jumpman and Attic Raid on that episode for the Jupiter Ace. Listen, the Jupiter Ace is a neat machine. I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping that's one. I haven't checked, but I'm hoping that's on the Mister, but we'll see. I know we can emulate it. We've done it. So that means next week, Brent, we'll be back in action full force with the Jupiter Ace computer. Britt, you had a couple names you wanted to mention here as we close this thing out.
Yes, we got two new supporters last week, and unfortunately I have not been able to get them into the closing credits, but I want to say hello and thank you very much to David Terrence and Super Tech Boy for their support, and hopefully next week we'll have an all-new video. So get your fill of Kung Fu Master, for it will be going away very soon.
There you go. Hey, you know, I think I've been plugging this on this show more than we have on the Amigas, but I'm going to plug it again. I can't stop. I won't stop. It's Amigathon. Look, whoop, Amigathon 2021. It's coming at you, at your face, July 24th, 2021 it will be happening 12 hours of nonstop action, followed by 12 more hours of nonstop action. We've already signed up several people for that second 12 hours, Brent, including the very popular Jack Flack will be involved. our good buddy, the master printer, Wild World Gaming, Dave Z. And we just got Stevie from Steven Stroh from the Coco Talk gang. He's going to be doing an hour in there too. So we're going to have a lot of cool guest streamers on that second half of the marathon. It should be a lot of fun. Myself, you, Boat, our good buddy John Marshall, probably all the usual suspects from around here, the Chud, good Matt. We'll have them all coming around. It should be a happening, Brent, and I'm looking forward to it. I also want to give a quick shout out to a couple other people that were doing charity events. The guys over at Pints and Amigas a week ago did a great charity event raising money for a little girl in their area, and it was a happening. And our good buddy Frodo did a charity event yesterday, and it was very successful in his event. So congratulations, Frodo. He's another guy who's a top shelf streamer, making the rest of us look like garbage. Now, Brent, any final thoughts on the Jupiter Ace before we take it to the house?
It should be fun to revisit.
Yes, I agree with you on that. So, thanks for joining us. We appreciate y'all. And until next week, adios.
Courts out.
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Hello to our YouTube subscribers and our Twitch followers. A special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and Bartbit for an amazing closing theme. Want to help keep ARG spinning for as little as a dollar a month? You can do so at our new Patreon at patreon.com/ARGpresents. Just like these fine folks. Ram, W. Vetke, Rolo, Olaf Hope, Anthony Jarvis, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Morris, Frodo NL, Steve Rathmussen, Bernhard Lucas, Chris Folds, Mitsuyama, Jason Warnes, Rob Black O'Hara, Andy Craig, Dave Velociraptor, Retro Allergy, Hermsky, John Dykeman, Jerry Dennington, Z9K9, and Mr. B. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify or Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Email it to us at argpresents@mail.com. We film live every Sunday, 10 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.